Welcome to Career Tools. As it's a holiday this week in the US, Independence Day, we're releasing a Hall of Fame cast. You may have heard us talking about the M Conference. It's our new conference, completely different to anything we've done before, where we're inviting executives to come and talk about their industry, the future, and what they've learned as executives. It's a great opportunity to hear some different perspectives and to meet some new people. And because that was in my mind, the Hall of Fame cast we chose was attending a conference. It's what to do before, what to do during, and what to do afterwards to really make the most of a conference or training that you're attending. Now, we released this cast in 2010, and as you know, all of our guidance is timeless, but technology changes. There's a good few mentions of BlackBerries and smartphones, which we probably wouldn't say today. But you know what we mean. One more thing. If the M Conference sounds interesting, go to the website. There's plenty of information about who's speaking, what they're speaking about, and you can register right now. Let's get started.
Welcome to Career Tools. Today's cast, attending a conference. Here we go. Well, Mark, it's about time we share this information with all our listeners. We did a cast some time ago for our conference attendees, on what to do, how to attend a conference, but we didn't share that more broadly. And given the number of conferences people go to, I think it's a good idea we share that now.
In fact, when we first wrote it, the idea was it was more broad than just our conference. It was industry meetings and so on.
No, actually, the idea was it was going to be about attending our conference, and you decided that people needed more information, as you always do, and expanded on it.
Yeah, which caused people to say, why are you telling me about this other stuff? I'd like to know what to do for your conference. Yeah. But look, you're going to go. In the course of your career, you're going to go to trainings, you're going to go to conferences and so on, and we all ought to have a simple template for how we attend, what we do before, what we do during, what we do after. And that's why Career Tools exists, is to help you do these things. And maybe this cast won't make you a master at it until you've been to 20 or 30 conferences or trainings or what have you. But it will keep you from making mistakes, and it will increase the chances that the first few times you go, you'll be successful.
Yeah. I wonder if people think that we have checklists like for everything. Like we have checklists on how we're going to set the dining room table for dinner.
I hope not, but maybe.
Okay. So what are the high level? What are the areas we're going to address today?
Yeah, really simple. There's stuff you do before preparation. There's stuff you do at the conference to make the conference itself effective. And then there's some simple stuff to do afterwards in terms of follow-up. That's all.
No. Okay. So, okay, let's talk about things you do before the conference. I mean, I assume you're just talking about like filling out the web form that conference folks put on. You fill that out,
right?
And then you show up, right? I mean, it's probably that simple.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be nice. Not so much. Right. Yeah. The first thing, you know, I'm surprised. We get questions all the time about things at our conferences, and all the information has been provided multiple times, and people have not prepared in certain ways, and so they have less than a good experience. So The first thing you got to do is read all the materials, right? I mean,
well, that's a simple one, but like you said, it's an amazing number of people who don't do that. They don't read the materials, therefore they're not prepared. So they attend a session, and they're not able to fully participate and get the benefits of it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, they and then they get frustrated. And in fact, in a lot of cases, this is particularly true for high D's and high I's, they get angry and their first interactions at the conference are not positive. And usually that goes away. It doesn't overshadow the entire experience. But if something's not done in advance, yeah, it can definitely affect the entire experience if you're not prepared completely.
Right. And good conference organizers understand that, right? You know, for example, in our conferences, We certainly for the ECC, we do it, but we're now starting to do it for the EMC, for the Effective Manager Conference. We provide folks the DISC profile, and we've referred to it several times on Career Tools Cast. So you've probably heard the terms DIS and C. So in any case, we provide them that profile. And when they take the profile online, they're able to get that, right? They can get it and they can print it right there online, or they can look at it in their web browser. But we still print out every single one and bring them to the conferences because we know folks don't read the materials. And so as effective conference organizers, at least we think, we understand that and take some precautions against it. But most conferences do not.
Yeah. It seems surprising to me. And then people get irritated or embarrassed, which is not effective, particularly when you're just starting out at a conference. And if the training is smaller or really relevant, that kind of start is not really good. Look, it's not hard. You just got to make some notes. You got to manage your calendar, right? Go over the materials. You know, make sure you know when and where it is. Look, I think we've talked about it before online. I'm amazed at the quality of cab drivers in Chicago. We've stayed recently at an airport Hyatt or Hilton. And when we asked a cab driver at O'Hare to take us there, he said, "Do you have GPS on your phone? What's the address?" he didn't know how to get to the whole raft of hotels over in Rosemont right there next to O'Hare. So, you know, you need to have those things. You need to know the address of the hotel. You need to know the phone number of the hotel. For me, what Wendy does is she puts an appointment in my calendar that says Airport Hilton. And when I click on the notes, it has the address as a link and the phone number as a link. And when I click on the address, it brings up Google Maps on my iPhone. And when I click on the phone number, it asks me, "Do you want to call that number?" And you don't need an admin to do that. You can do that yourself. And it just seems that people don't do it and then are late and again are frustrated.
Yeah. Not only having the directions and address and phone number of the hotel would be useful, but also, you know, putting some time on your calendar to print the agenda, to print the sessions, the workshops you can possibly attend, in terms of getting organized so that when you get to the conference, you're not just figuring it out right there on the spot. You know what you'd like to attend. You know what sessions are important, and you have a strategy.
Yeah. In fact, the strategy I generally recommend for trade shows as opposed to conferences or trainings is nowadays trade shows operators have allowed the trade shows to get so big because the bigger they are, the more press they get, both before and during, that you really need to decide some sort of strategy. I see far too many people at trade shows wandering aimlessly from booth to booth, not willing to engage with anybody. "Oh, I don't want to talk to them. They're just going to sell me," kind of thing. And you sort of take a 30,000 foot view and try to see everything. And the problem with that is you might as well just go to people's websites, you know, wandering down the aisle without talking to anybody because you don't have time to engage with anybody is a waste of travel money and travel dollars and the operational costs of being out of the office. So you need to decide, okay, is there a specialty here? Do I focus on one part of my industry? Do I focus on one or two customers or one or two or three vendors? Is there a particular trend that I'm going to spend the majority of my time with? And that takes preparation. You have to look at who's attending. You have to look at what the themes are, and you have to make some decisions in advance.
Yeah, absolutely. While you're preparing as well, make sure that you let the conference organizers know all your personal needs. If you have allergies or specific needs, make sure you give it to them. Not only is it more convenient for the folks organizing the conference, but you're more likely to get what you need. So go ahead and do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And dress code too. I mean, I'm amazed. I see business people going to conferences and they're wearing shorts and flip-flops. You know, maybe you're in the surfboard or skateboard industry, but if it's a day away from the office, you're still representing your office. And look, wear your badge. You know, the badge is there for a reason. There are people who say, "Ooh, either I'm really important, so I don't have to wear a badge, or I'm nobody, so nobody knows me, so I don't need to wear a badge, or I want to appear important, so I won't wear a badge." The fact is, nowadays, conference operators are saying, you know, you can't get in without a badge, or you can't walk around without a badge. And look, if you're wearing a badge, you represent XYZ Corporation, and then you're dressed in shorts and flip-flops, XYZ looks like an unprofessional outfit. Yeah, there are exceptions, certainly. But in general, appropriate attire is reasonable. Now, you don't have to wear a suit. You don't even have to wear dress slacks. You can wear khakis, perhaps, particularly if it's going to be all day, you know, for a couple of days. And you're going to be in and out of training room, sitting down, standing up, wandering the trade show floor, those kind of things. And if you're in a training session, find out what the layout of the room is and find out whether or not you're going to be doing a lot of interactive stuff and dress appropriately, but also recognize you're representing your organization.
Yeah. And if you're unsure, you can do one of two things. If you think it's business casual, but you're unsure and you can't find out for whatever reason, then you can choose to wear a suit, because, right, you could always take the tie off or the coat off or whatever, or bring two sets of clothes. If you're unsure, don't show up the day of the conference. Find out you're not wearing appropriate attire and then be unable to focus during the entire conference because you feel out of place. I've seen
there
that
you go.
As well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Good.
Okay. So how about, you know, we just can't leave the office without letting people know, right, and arranging for coverage of our job. Any suggestions there?
Yeah. Look, you've got to figure out in advance what you're going to be doing, what potential deliverables you're going to miss, you know, make a decision about what can slide a day and what can't, and then address those things that need to be covered. And when we say cover, it's surprising, but look, if you're a manager, you need to have designated somebody to make managerial decisions in your absence. You know, if you have an admin, you've got to decide which things your admin can do and which they need to call you about, and perhaps when during your schedule they can get in touch with you. But having cover means having somebody who is responsible for handling stuff when you're gone. The vast majority of people don't do this when they travel and things grind to a screeching halt, or say, hey, you can get me anytime you want. And then they discover that really they can't, you know, people at your office can't get you anytime they want. You know, we have a policy at our conferences about, hey, please turn your cell phones on vibrate. And I think there are people who think, well, I'll get up, you know, and walk out 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day, which is technically okay, provided you're sensitive to others with it. But at our conferences, people end up not doing it. I've had several people say, you know, this is great. I expected to be getting up and down lots of meetings and so on. And I just blew everything off because I was really into this and it was interactive and I was learning a lot. I didn't expect it to be quite so hands-on. And then I realized, okay, they don't have coverage. In other words, somebody's not filling in for them and things aren't getting done. So don't just tell your cover what needs to be done next, but also what might arise and what are the various choices he or she can make in order to get through it, whether they need to call you or whether they can go to somebody else or whether they can make decision themselves or whether they can literally let it slip.
Or when they can call you, right? I'll check in with you at 8 o'clock before the conference begins. I'll be available at lunchtime, and there's a break between this session, I'll check with you then, or you can give me a call then. I mean, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Just give them some instructions and then follow through on that in a way that they can actually action those appropriately.
So just leaving an office message on your phone's not sufficient. We talk about coverage.
Yeah, an out-office message. Yeah, I'm out. I'll get back to you. You know, generally speaking, people's messages are not helpful. Or if they're going to be out for a couple of days, they might leave nothing, which seems surprising. You know, leave a longer message, particularly if you have, you know, if you're in an operational role that requires coverage of customer service, operations, or systems. Hey, if you have a problem about this, call this person. If you have a problem about that, call that person. Now, that said, I've had a lot of people tell me, oh, I never listen to those. But that doesn't eliminate our obligation to be professional about the fact that we're not going to be handling our responsibilities that day and helping people get their problem solved.
Here's one that I learned the hard way, which is kind of leaving myself a day to recover after a conference. I went to a conference one time. It was a couple of days. I came back on a Monday, Tuesday. I came back on a Wednesday. I figured I'd do my planning and get going on the rest of the week. And I got back to my office and I was slammed. And part of the problem was I had scheduled my Wednesday just like any other day. And I had very little time to do my catching up. I felt like the rest of the week was a complete waste.
Yeah, I think people think that, you know, I'm so valuable, I'm going to schedule myself so tightly. And you're right, they don't leave themselves a recovery day. You're going to need time to go through email. You're going to need to deal with the voicemails, right, if you don't do it. And I've done this before, too, where I actually have a day, but I tell myself, I'm going to go ahead and go through email before I get back. And I don't. I'm too tired on the plane coming back, or something else has come up. I have to deal with one particular pressing problem. And I end up coming back. And even if I've got some time scheduled, I'm still swamped. And I've learned as well that scheduling stuff right after I get back is dangerous. Now, look, your boss gets to override that, of course. Yeah, if, of course. You know, if they have you on a busy day, they have you on a busy day and there's nothing you can do about that. You could certainly ask to change it. You know, if they put you on a meeting the next morning and you're not, you know, you're a little bit worried about how swamped you'll be, you could say, can I move that? Or what I would say is, hey, look, you know, I'm on the last flight of the night. There's a chance I won't make it. In the 2010 world, you never know what's going to happen regarding the tightness of airline schedules. And so I wouldn't want to schedule something the next morning. You know, we have a rule, don't take the last flight out, because if you have a full day scheduled and the last flight out doesn't go and you're delayed, you've got a scheduling nightmare to recover from.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned this earlier, but let's talk just a little bit more about it. And I think that's the idea that a lot of folks, no, and I think this is a huge mistake, which is they don't think about what they want to achieve before they show up at the conference. They just, I'm going to go to the conference. I show up. I have no strategy, no plan, what I'm going to do, what sessions I'm going to go to, what kind of people I want to meet, or who specifically do I want to meet when I'm there? What session are they likely to be at? I mean, that kind of stuff. It's a huge failing. There's such an opportunity there to improve your experience as well as the effectiveness of your conference attendance.
Yeah. So just plan ahead a little bit. And it's not that hard. Even if you've never been to a conference, you've seen, or you've never been to a trade show, you know what one roughly looks like, and or you can find out from somebody. And if you don't know, if you literally don't know where to focus, or you know, or what presentations to attend versus not, ask your boss, ask a couple of peers, ask a mentor about what possible ways, what theme you want to address, or what if you can't come up with a theme, it's just too hard, say, okay, what two or three things do I believe I'll get the most out of? And that means going over the calendar of events. And by the way, in some cases, you need to do that 2 weeks to even a month in advance, because some of those things fill up. Generally, they don't, but at bigger conferences, sometimes they do. Not because they're trying to send a message of exclusivity, but because they have a physical space limitation. I remember giving a presentation a number of years ago to a gaming conference, and you know, they kept saying, we need to put you in a bigger room because people are signing up for it. There ended up being 500-600 people in the room, and it was the biggest. I mean, I don't think the presentation was all that fabulous. It was just that they had a lot of interest, but they had to move other things in other rooms because people wanted to go to this talk about management, and they finally cut it off because I was in the biggest room there was, and they couldn't do anything more. And the hotel will keep them from putting too many people in a given room.
There's a mindset here, right? Where we often feel that training is something we're sent on, right? And the time out of the office is, we can ill afford it, right? But if you think of it this way, and you think about your goals and objectives before you attend, you can really see it as a way of achieving something you couldn't in the office and increase the utility of those days. And it's really a mindset, I think.
That's a good point. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I was thinking more from a scheduling perspective. But yeah, you can become more effective a little bit strategically by thinking in advance. Good point.
Good. Okay, so that kind of covers some of the stuff before the conference. What about at the conference? The day of the conference arrives. Now what do we do?
Yeah, there's an old saying, don't arrive on time, arrive in time.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah, on time is, you know, for a 9 o'clock conference at 9 o'clock. But in time is you arrive at 8:30. You know, if you haven't scouted it out in advance and you've got a rental car because you're staying a couple of miles away or you're taking the subway or whatever, you know how to get where you're going. You don't end up in the biggest line of the day, which is at the last minute. And you find yourself a seat, you know where the bathrooms are, you get all of the swag, the you know, the free stuff that comes out, and you decide what to throw away quickly rather than lugging around for a couple of hours wondering, do I need to keep any of this? But I'm too busy right now to make that decision. And look, it makes no sense to spend the money to be out of the office and to lose value for a half an hour. It just doesn't. Getting a half an hour early. And I know people who say, oh, I would never be there half an hour early. It sends a message, I'm not that busy. Well, actually, it doesn't. The people who are really, really busy have their time scheduled. And if they were busy, they would be on the phone or they would have a conference room somewhere and they'd be getting things done. Showing up the last minute doesn't mean you're busy. It just means you're not well scheduled. It means you're not professional about managing your time. Or it means you overslept.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And the experience is so much better when you arrive 20 minutes early, have a cup of coffee and can relax before going into it.
It's like airplanes. People laugh at me. You get to the airport an hour early. I said, yeah, at a minimum an hour early, because if I'm 15 minutes late, then now I'm there only 45 minutes early. And depending upon security, if security takes 15 minutes, if I'm delayed 15 minutes and security takes 15 minutes, the plane is boarding the moment I walk to the gate, which is not good. It gives me no room for error. And so I'm there an hour or an hour and a half before the flight. Now, admittedly, if I'm with a client that day, it takes me away from the client a half hour earlier. But I know that, and I'm simply more efficient and more effective in the time I have with the client that particular day. These people who wait until the last minute often don't get any more done and then have travel risk, which doesn't make much sense to us. So yes, I'm one of the guys sitting at the gate for maybe 30 minutes before we board. And maybe people think I must not be that busy because I have a chance to sit at the gate. Of course, if I'm sitting at the gate and I'm at peace about making the flight, I can actually get work done rather than sitting spinning in my head, oh my gosh, am I going to make it? Am I going to make it? Am I going to make it home? Am I going to make it to the client? And so on. And same thing with getting to a conference. If you're there a half hour early or even 45 minutes early, the risk of being thought, oh, that person must have nothing to do, versus the risk of missing something, there's nothing wrong with scheduling to be there in advance, because one chance out of 10, there's traffic, there's delays, there's detours, there's an alarm that doesn't go off. Shoot, I'm sure it's old-fashioned, but I have two alarms when I travel, and I use them.
Talking about work, let's talk about breaks, because I love breaks, right? You're at a conference, in a two-hour session, you got a 15-minute, maybe even 30-minute break, and this is the time to get work done. Man, you just go in the corner, get a cup of coffee, and get on that BlackBerry and start pounding out emails. Perfect. Just great.
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, I won't argue that that is, it may be a mitigation technique for the day back at the office, right? And certainly it sends a message that you're a busy person. Although I've always wondered, really? I mean, the number of people that I know that have to make decisions that fast, it's certainly true for salespeople and customer service people who are responding with some immediacy. And I suppose people are responding to their bosses as well. But our approach is different, right? Our approach is you use the breaks to meet people. Conferences are where you can really make a significant impact on your external network. I mean, think about our conferences. I don't want to make this an advertisement for our conferences because it's not, but everybody at our conference is interested in improving their management skills. Everybody at our conference is, if it's a communications conference, is interested in improving their communication skills. This is probably at our conference or any other conference somebody attends, is the most concentrated collection of people from different industries or from outside your company, let's put it that way, that you're going to go to. So why not take advantage of it? And rather than bemoaning that you don't get a chance to build your network, delay some of the urgent, quote unquote, emails or text messages that you're sending on breaks and go up and say hi to people. I suppose you wouldn't want to go say hi to people, one of the people that's on their phone. But it's entirely possible that the people that you could be talking to, you'll be meeting later, particularly if you're somebody who's going to do deals or have discussions with a potential customer. It's far better to meet somebody or the actual person you're going to meet with from that company before the meeting that's scheduled. You're missing an opportunity. And if at the end of the year, you feel like your internal network is solid, but not your external network, it's because you missed the opportunity to conference like this. And look, we've got conference, we've got podcasts about this, right? Building your network. I think we talk about using conferences, how to introduce people to one another. For younger people, being the one person in a group of three or four who knows the appropriate way to introduce people to one another, first of all, you're seen as a leader, but you're also seen as well-skilled, somebody who is good with people, that you know sort of things that other people know they ought to know, but don't know how. Well, how to politely join a group, right? There's several casts that relate to it. I know one of them, I remember somebody just asked me about recently, is how to use your smartphone, how to be smart about messaging. And one of the things you do is when you're messaging and somebody comes up, you put it away. And when you're talking to somebody and walking down the hallway, you're not still messaging. You're not still texting somebody. You're not still emailing somebody. You do one thing or the other. You text or you email or you talk to somebody. And if the purpose of a break, we recommend, is to meet people, then after perhaps one or two urgent messages, focus on the other people and put it away.
Yeah. This goes back to the strategy part of preparing for a conference. You got to make the mind shift from breaks being a way to get work done that you would otherwise have been doing to an important part of the conference in and of itself. And I would argue particularly for a lot of technical folks, it is the most important part.
Yeah.
Meeting other people, building your network. But some of the information you're getting at the conference, you can get through other means. You can listen to podcasts, you can read books, you can do all this stuff. But meeting people, shaking their hands, looking in the eyes, learning their names, learning something about them, if they don't work for your company, there's no other place to do it. This is the place to do that. And you might as well, when you're there, you might as well focus on the things that you could only do there and not the things that you can do somewhere else.
Right. In fact, people come to our conferences all the time and I walk up to them and they don't know who I am. Perhaps there are plenty of people who have never listened to a podcast that come to our conferences and they actually say, I walk up and say, hi, Mark Horseman, nice to meet you. And they say back to me, hi. And I know we've talked about this before, the idea that when somebody introduces themselves, you introduce yourself back. But clearly, people don't know that. Learning how to introduce yourself and how to handle introductions before a conference is a great way to increase your effectiveness when you're there.
Absolutely.
If you're located in the Pacific Northwest and are looking for a conference event to attend, you're in luck. Manager Tools will be in Seattle August 20th and 21st with our Effective Manager and Effective Communicator conferences. We come to Seattle but once a year. Don't miss this. Register today at manager-tools.com/training.
Let's talk about participation, because I see a lot of folks who attend a conference and, no, literally, for example, our conferences, we send out a contact list at the end of the conference. And I know the names, right? So they're small enough we can memorize everybody's names at the conference. And so I'm putting the pictures and the names together before I send out this contact list. And I look at some folks, I go, you know, that person didn't say an entire word during 2 days. How can that be?
I'm amazed by that. And yet there are people who say, well, I'm not there to meet people. I'm just there to learn. I learn by sitting quietly and so on. And I can understand that point of view, that behavioral tendency. The fact is, unfortunately, that everyone learns better by interacting, even if that means trying to figure out what question you're going to ask in advance. Yeah, look, we recommend you participate if it's allowed. If questions aren't asked for, then there's no need to ask questions. But if you have a question, there's nothing wrong with asking it. And look, be smart. Look, if you're the one that asks a question of a group in a group of 100 people, people are going to be impressed, provided the question is reasonable and it's delivered well. And, you know, in terms of delivered well, it's easy. If they give you a microphone, stand up and say, hi, I'm Mark Horseman. I'm from Manager Tools. My question is, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? Let them know who you are and then ask your question.
And those folks who do it that way, those are the folks that on breaks, people are coming up to and talking and initiating conversations, right? You want to build your network, do that, and people will come to you. You won't even have to go find them.
Yeah, exactly. And again, I'm surprised that people say, well, they walk out of it, well, I had a question about this or a question about that. And then the other person says, yeah, I had the same question. I think, wow, there are two people who could ask a question and neither one of them did. And now they're talking to each other. I hope neither one of them says what they think the answer is, because obviously neither one of them knows. So it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be interactive. It's okay to participate. It's okay to wait after a session and meet the presenter. Look, if the person's really, really good, look, if you're a VP and the person's really, really good and maybe they're not at your level, maybe you want to meet them and maybe they'll be part of your bench later. You never know.
And if if nothing else, it makes the session a lot more interesting and entertaining when people participate. So good. How about taking notes?
Yeah, we have a podcast on it. That's probably the best thing to say. There are better ways to take notes. And, you know, I don't know. I'm amazed people. Well, when people ask us about one-on-ones, we say, you know, they say, well, I'm afraid my people are going to think that I'm documenting. I said, what other meetings do you go to that you don't take notes? And in the case of a conference, what other meetings do you spend thousands of dollars for that you then don't take notes? Right? That just doesn't make sense.
Well, it's going to be a lot harder telling your boss what you learned when you get back if you don't take notes. That's for sure.
Yeah, and look, they'll probably have a pen and paper in there, but take your notebook so that you don't have to write it on really crummy paper with a really crummy pen and then have it stuffed into your briefcase and lose it. Make it a part of the notebook you take to meetings at the office earlier in the week.
One thing I see folks do that just seems, I can understand why they do it. I just don't think it's terribly effective. And that's, you know, they're much less effective on the second day because what happens the evening of the first day? They partay.
Yeah. That's just not me. I don't. And sometimes if I'm the speaker, I don't, you know, I have no interest to go into a party or, if you're at a party with, you know, with some of your friends and you have a beer or cocktail, that's fine. And look, there are conferences where people feel like I get to meet people who are in my industry and they're friends of mine. I used to work with them or so on. And we're going to go out and have dinner and we're going to have a good time. And we don't have to be sharp the way we are at work the next morning. So therefore, you know, I can have a little bit more fun. I can let my hair down a little bit. And yet there's always stories, right? There's always stories of somebody who is late the next day or, quite frankly, worse, is less than professional because they're drunk. They're less than professional in front of friends or associates or colleagues. And we can assure you those stories get back to your company. If you're the only one going, unless you're at a very, very small company, that doesn't mean you're the only person in the company that knows that you're going or that knows someone else that knows that you're going. And if it's bad enough, that's a career limiting move. Now, we're not suggesting you go back to the hotel and sit in your room, you know, by yourself, but gee whiz, I mean, the company is not paying for you to get drunk. In fact, if you're traveling on business, being drunk is a no-no, period. It doesn't matter whether you travel a lot and you think I'm off the clock. Off the clock means nothing. You have an obligation to behave professionally as a representative of your firm. So we just don't recommend it. Don't be the person who makes a career-limiting move because they think this is an opportunity to have a good time.
Don't spend the day building your network and then the evenings destroying your network.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. And we've got a cast about Christmas parties. It was several years ago, but it makes some recommendations about how to behave and so on. And that those are good recommendations for a conference party or even a dinner party at a conference.
Good. So you prepared well. You've done a few simple things during the conference itself, but there's some things we need to do after the conference, aren't there?
Yeah, look, follow up, right? I mean, the first thing is strike when the iron's hot when it comes to people. Enter the names you meet, the people that you decided, hey, I want to stay in touch with that person. Enter them in your contact folder system, however you do it. Nowadays with Evernote, you can take a picture of their business card and get it. I think Evernote has a really good ability, it may be add-ons, has a really good ability to capture the key information, right?
Yeah, it's not an add-on. It's perfect for that. I put all my business cards in Evernote and then I throw away the business card.
Yeah. And then, you know, Control-Shift-K. I know that sounds old-fashioned, but in Outlook, that's the way to create a task. And the task is stay in touch with Joe or Terry or Jane, and then Control-G for repetitiveness, right? How often you want to repeat it, every 3 or 4 months. And you'll find all the details of that in our Building a Network cast. You know, and note, I'll just make a pitch for that. It doesn't say networking. We don't have a networking cast. We know that most of you don't want to network. On the other hand, we do know that you want to have a strong network, and that means you have to build the network. And the way you build the network is by meeting people and staying in touch with them. It's that easy.
I've seen you do this before, and it surprised me because a lot of folks don't do this. Is you've after a conference sent personal notes to the speakers. Now everybody understands. Okay, we'll build their network with other participants, but for some reason, people throw speakers out of that circle. You don't.
Yeah, I mean, my feeling about it is, if a speaker's good, if somebody's professional, if I am impressed, I want them part of my network. And this is a way to introduce myself. Now, I don't ask a bunch of questions. I simply write a thank you note, a handwritten thank you note. And this is a way of me saying, I'm not like everybody else, and saying thank you. And, you know, thank you notes are, unfortunately, even though we highly recommend them, they're a lost art. And so I introduce myself this way. And if, in fact, I talk to them briefly, I'll mention something either about their presentation or about the discussion we had afterwards. And it's a very powerful way. I doubt seriously that most speakers who get a note after the conference will forget who sent it. Even if you think they're getting a lot, you'll be surprised. And as I said before, I keep all of mine and read them on bad days. I can't say for certain that I remember every person who sent me a handwritten note 5 years after I got the note, but I definitely am much more likely to respond to an email from them in the next couple of 3 months if I get a handwritten note for them shortly after the conference.
Yeah, makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
If you enjoy going to conferences and you appreciate the resources that the company is spending on your going to this conference, and it makes sense to make sure that when you get back that the company realizes some of the value of that. And part of that is, you know, a real simple step, just brief your boss and what you learned and who you met.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think what most people do is they go back to the office and they're in the office and they're working, right? Take a moment and draft a note, or if your boss is a listener, set a time where you brief her on what happened, key points, what you learned, maybe the number of people, maybe not the details, but the number of people you met and plan on staying in touch with, maybe a review of the theme, or, hey, I don't know if you know this, but our competitor has a new product, or several of our competitors were talking about something that's in prototype stage. Generally speaking, you're not going to get, in today's modern connected world, you're not going to break a story to your boss. On the other hand, I'd be willing to bet the vast majority of bosses don't know as much as you about the state of the industry the day after you come back from an industry-wide conference or a training session, if in fact at a training session you interact with others. Now, if they're a reader, send them an email. You know, hey, I just thought I'd give you a quick review of the training session. And let me also say this. You will be able to get more training or travel or conference budget than other people if you take the 15 minutes, either on the plane on the way back or in the office the first day you're back, and send a detailed note to your boss. Not every single thing you did. That's not what we mean by detailed. But don't just say, hey, I had a great time. Thanks for sending me. Give them some value. Show them the value that you got out of the conference. And they will see that as professionally closing the loop. And they will be able to use it to justify saying, oh, that money that we spent there was valuable. And look, one of the worst things in the world for bosses, but everybody's sort of complicit with it now, is I send somebody to training. I'm not really sure they're going to get a lot out of it. They don't come back and tell me they learned anything specific. And then 90 days later, I haven't seen any change. They know for a fact the training wasn't valuable. And so the next time we ask, we've reduced our chances because, one, we haven't changed our behavior, and two, we didn't close out with them. So again, we recommend closing out. Brief your boss verbally if he or she is a listener. Send an email first, and then offer to stop by if, in fact, they're a reader.
How about the team? Is it worth sharing what you've learned with the team, or is this a competitive advantage and we should just kind of hold it all to ourselves?
Yeah, you know, I think you brief the team on what you learned just because, you know, if it's an industry conference, why wouldn't they want to know too? Although I'll tell you, a lot of bosses, you know, we've said the old story that bosses somehow seem to think that they get communicated to rather than communicated through. Why it is you would want to know stuff that's not confidential, but you wouldn't want your team to know it is kind of beyond me. But yeah, for some reason, bosses don't. Now, I think some bosses don't talk about trainings because they'd have to admit, I didn't know this before. But trust me, folks, your people know that you didn't know that before. And admitting it is actually a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness, right? So, yeah, I think telling your team in your next staff meeting, or even copying them on the note you put to the boss, I think is helpful. And look, you may have to delegate something to them, and you may want them to use your outside network. And the fact that they know somebody, that you met somebody at a conference, helps them in terms of using leveraging your network when you ask them to help.
Yeah. Man, that was useful. You know, this is one of those areas that folks don't think a whole lot about. And if you're going to spend company resources, which are rare, right?
Yeah, more rare than they were 10 years ago, right?
Absolutely. So why not make the best of it? By doing some simple strategic thinking ahead of time and then taking some simple actions before, during, and after to make it as a useful use of those resources possible.
Yeah, you build your network, you learn, and you gain competitive information and industry information. And the more you know, provided you know you put it into action afterwards, the more professional, the more effective you're going to be. So do your preparation, know what to do at the conference, and then follow up appropriately. That's how you do it.
And build your network, which will, you know, the benefits will accrue to you for many, many years to come if you take advantage of it. Don't pass it up.
Yep. Thanks, partner.
Thank you.